Who is Jesus? It is a key question. It's the question at the heart of Christianity. It's for that reason that it's the question that is the start of the Alpha course, which we'll be doing together in October, as you heard. And I was particularly thinking about this as I read a little quote in the Times the other day from Sir Tim Rice, who wrote Jesus Christ Superstar. He said this: "We tried to humanize Christ in Jesus Christ Superstar because, for me, I find Jesus, as portrayed in the Gospels as a god, a very unrealistic figure. My historian's soul rose up in rebellion at this. Okay, so I don't like the way that Hitler is portrayed in the books. It's so negative. It's so cruel. So I'm going to invent a new Hitler, and I'm going to tell you how lovely he was, and how friendly, and how cuddly, and how he loved animals. You just can't do that. You can't take a historical character and make up what you'd like to think about them. People have tried. I know you've been waiting for this. The Vikings, for instance. You see, they tried to do this with the Vikings in the 1970s. Archaeologists came along and they said, these poor Vikings, they've had this terrible press. For years, people have been saying, they murdered, they raped, they plundered, they killed. And actually, as archaeologists coming from Scandinavia in particular, we don't find evidence of this when we dig up markets and towns. Well, you wouldn't. So a man called W. Holmquist wrote in his book, Swedish Vikings on Helja and Birka, in 1979, it was the era of the peaceful Viking. That they came to bloody blows now and again is scarcely to be wondered at. Such things still happen today. As you know, they were just lads having fun, and occasionally it got a bit out of hand. You know, like fights down at the seafront. You know, these things happen. The problem for Mr. Holmquist is that in the years since, archaeologists have been digging up sites where they find dead bodies with the marks of weapons on them, and digging up layers in Europe and in Britain where you find burnt wood, where the Archbishop's Palace was burnt down or the cathedral was burnt down, exactly as the records say from those times. All the writers agree, whether they're in Ireland or in the British Isles or in, Ireland or England and Wales and Scotland, or indeed on the continent, that the Vikings were nasty, bloodthirsty killers. And so we need to take seriously what the texts say about them. However, it is also true that the stories grow in the telling. One story that I've been particularly interested in is the sack of a town that we visited on our summer holidays this year, Nantes, in 843. It was on St. John's Day, the day of St. John the Baptist, in June. And we have contemporary records, almost certainly from eyewitnesses, who describe how the Vikings landed nearby, set the town on fire, killed the inhabitants, and stole what they wanted. Over the years, the story grew. And so you can find an 11th century account. This happened in 843, remember? 11th century account said, and the bishop was standing at the altar of the cathedral. He was leading the congregation in prayer, and he just got to the line, lift up your hearts, when the Vikings surged in and slaughtered him, as the holy man of God was celebrating the Mass. But actually, if you read the eyewitness accounts from the period, it says the bishop and all the people ran for the congregation as the strong place where they would be safe. But the Vikings burnt down and battered down the doors and killed them anyway. He wasn't celebrating Mass at the time. He was running for his life like everybody else. And so what we need to do, and here's my point, is we need to go back to the original accounts. We need to get as near as we can to what happened. Ideally, we find eyewitnesses who saw what happened, who reported what happened. And if we can't do that, we find people who wrote down what eyewitnesses said. That's why when we want to know about Jesus, the place to go is not what Tim Rice has made up about it, or indeed what people wrote about him in the Middle Ages, or indeed in the 4th and 5th centuries. We go back to the eyewitnesses, the closest we can get to the original Jesus. And that's why we go back to the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. On my study leave last November, I made my way through a 600-page book called Jesus and the Eyewitnesses. And Richard Baucher makes an incredibly compelling account of saying why we can trust the Gospels as eyewitness testimony, the stories of people who were actually there, who heard Jesus speak, who saw what he did, and then recorded it so that others would know and others would be sure as well. So, four Gospels. Rather like if you want to know an account of an event, what actually happened yesterday, then it's really good. You can read a newspaper or an online website, which is a news web. Or even better, you read, say, a selection. You read three or four different ones, and they bring slightly different accounts. The reason they do that is not because, okay, in some newspapers they are making it up, but if you go to a quality newspaper or a quality website, they aren't making it up. But different people are giving you different memories because they were different reporters who were there, who saw and experienced different things, who heard different things. And together you get a composite picture. As long as they agree generally with one another, you know, yeah, this is fairly safe. This is reliable. And so with the Gospels, we have four different testimonies because four different people are writing with different memories. They've talked to different eyewitnesses. They bring in different testimony. And John is particularly different. And it's John's gospel that we'll be looking at this term. If you've picked up a term card, if you haven't, there are plenty available at the back. You see that at our 10:30 services, we're working our way through the first part of John's gospel. And actually, our whole series is looking at the question, who is Jesus? And looking at the different things that he said and did. And we're using a number of times the alpha titles because this is the question that is at the heart of Christianity. This is what John is trying to set out to us. I want to tell you, he says, who Jesus is and the difference that he makes. So come on this journey with John in the weeks that come. But today we're looking at the start of John's gospel. And as soon as you read John and a different gospel, you see, ooh, they're kind of different. Because John is the poet. John is the artist. John is the dreamer. John is the wordsmith. He loves creating atmospheres. I have to be honest and say, I'm not. I'm not like that. I like, you tell me the facts and let me work out what's going on. I love Mark. He's straightforward. He's simple. He gets the point. Let's look at the start of Mark. I'm telling you, he says, this is the beginning of the good news about Jesus the Messiah, the Son of God. As it is written in Isaiah the prophet, I'll send my messenger ahead of you who'll prepare your way. A voice of one calling in the wilderness, prepare the way for the Lord, make straight paths for him. And so, John the Baptist appeared. Mark starts in the Judean desert. I'm telling you, this is where it was, this is what it was like, this is what happened. Simple, straightforward facts. Bit of background, this is fulfilling the Old Testament, just so you know where we're coming from. And then, boom, here's my story. Look at John. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And suddenly you're in the cosmos. You're right back at the start of creation. It's like, whoa, let me blow your mind for a minute. Before I start telling you, I'll tell you about Jesus, but hang on a bit. Let's first of all, let's open up the windows of heaven and let's dream dreams. Let's see the context in which Jesus came. And clearly, John is echoing Genesis. Genesis chapter 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. But here's the thing. What John says in echoing Genesis is this is who I'm telling you about. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of men. He says, Jesus is there. The beginning of creation, the dawn of time. Jesus is there. Whoa. Judean desert, yeah, I get that. You're saying, at the start of everything, Jesus was there? That's what I'm saying. And he says, Jesus, you know that what God did in chapter 1 of Genesis, he created life. God breathed life into being. And John says, that's Jesus? He's the life. In him was life. Before death, chaos, nothing, God breathed life. That's Jesus. And the first thing God said, you know, was, let there be light. See, that's Jesus as well. I'm telling you, Jesus, yes, Jesus is the one who starts it all off, but he's also the life and he's also the light. This is all Jesus. So he's trying to blow your mind. Right at the start, he's saying, look, I'm going to tell you a story, and it's an amazing story, because it's about someone who is the creator, who is the source of life, who is the source of light. That's Jesus, okay? And obviously, most of us, you know, when you kind of get something mind-blowing, you don't take it in at first. So what John does is cleverly, through his story, the story of Jesus, he keeps reminding you, do you remember what I told you at the beginning? And so, for example, in... I'm coming to that in a second. But then he says, if you haven't got the point that this is God and this is Jesus, let me remind you that that God has become Jesus. The Word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. That's Eugene Peterson's, a poet, his poetic version of the poetry of John 1:14. The Word became flesh. God became human. God became one of us, lived among us. He's saying that God, that amazing life, light, creation, that God, he's now come to us. That's my story. That's what I'm telling you about. And to make sure we don't miss that, back to my point, he keeps bringing it up again and again. And so Jesus says in John 11, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live, even though he dies. Whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you remember John 1? In him was life, and that life was the light of men. That's who I'm talking about, says John. Jesus brings life. Like before, chaos, death, nothing. Jesus comes, life. And he says, and do you remember I told you Jesus is light? In John 8:12, Jesus says, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. He says that in the context of making a blind person see. Just as you get who I'm telling you about? I'm telling you about Jesus, the one who's God come to earth. And I'm telling you, he's the life and he's the light. He's God. He's God, people. That's what he's saying. He's God and his life makes all the difference. The thing is, he doesn't say it in a kind of simple, straightforward, school textbook kind of way. He says it in poetry. He paints in glorious colours. It's a little bit abstract at times. So if Seamus Heaney were here, he'd be talking in these kind of terms. The coarse boot nestled on the lug, the shaft against the inside knee was levered firmly. I'd say the man was digging with a spade. But I'm not a poet like Seamus Heaney. And for him, it's beautiful, it's craftily created. John's like that. He's the poet, he's the dreamer. And that's how we need to read John. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We've seen his glory, the glory of the one and only, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. God became a human being. Jesus is God. That's what he's saying. Now the thing is, Jesus didn't say that. Jesus couldn't say that. Jesus couldn't go around saying, by the way, I'm God. God come in the flesh. I'm God living as a human. Because in Judaism, if he'd done that, they would immediately have killed him for blasphemy. You really, really, really couldn't do that. So Jesus said it poetically, said it allusively. I'm the light of the world. I'm the resurrection and the life. I'm the way, the truth and the life. And to those who understood, it's like, whoa, I get that. He's saying he's God. Just occasionally people got it and then they picked up stones to stone him. And he said, why are you picking up stones to stone me? What have I said? Because he was so clever about the way he said it that they couldn't actually nail it on him until they did nail it on him. Come back to that in a second. But John's point was this. Do you know what? I'm telling you this because we saw him. We have seen his glory. We heard him. We touched him. We know this because it changed our lives forever. And at the end of his gospel, John says, I'm telling you all this so that you too can know Jesus, know who he is. You can believe in him. And in believing in him, you'll find life in his name. I could tell you, he says, loads more stories about the things Jesus did. I could tell you loads more about the things he said. But I'm just telling you these things so that you know him and so that you believe in him. Because I've seen him, I've heard him, I've touched him. He's God come in the flesh. He's God living in human form. He's God who's moved into our neighborhood. That's who I'm telling you about. And then, as I just touched on, there's a weird twist in that prologue, in that first 14 verses of John. He says, he was in the world. And though the world was made through him, the world didn't recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. You see, John is speaking about God revealed. We've seen his glory. In Jesus, God has been revealed. But actually, the act of revelation for lots of people was God concealed. They couldn't see God in Jesus. They just saw someone who was acting in ways they didn't like, ways that good, respectable religious people didn't like, overturning their traditions and their customs and the way that they did things in church, and they didn't like that. So although the whole point of John's story is that God has revealed himself to other people, they still don't see it. And it was true then, and it's still true now. And you might, like me, think, why didn't they get it? How is it that people don't understand when they hear this, when it's explained to them, how is it they still don't get it? Let me tell you a true story, again, which I read about just this last week, which kind of helps me see how this sadly doesn't always work the way it should. I'm sure you've heard of Malala. She won the Nobel Peace Prize for standing up for women's and girls' education in Pakistan. And she is celebrated and hailed around the world as being such a great example for someone who stands up for what is right, someone who was bold and brave and courageous. And this week she was, or last week before last, she was in the news because she won a place at Oxford University. And we all go, that's great, well done her, facing all that adversity and coming out to this. But this week I was reading that at home in Pakistan, that's not how a lot of people see her at all. They call her shameful and treacherous. Some people say that actually she was shot by the CIA as a plot to undermine Pakistan. A lot of people resent her popularity in the West and are jealous of her success. And at home, she's not a heroine. She's the kind of person you spit about on the street when you talk about her. We don't like her. Who does she think she is? And you think, oh my gosh, if that can happen to someone that we see as just doing so good, as being so brave, as doing something that's so fundamentally right, perhaps we can begin to see how when Jesus, the Son of God, came and lived a perfect life, people turned against him and said, who does he think he is? And turned against him and nailed him to a cross. But John doesn't end with that sad news, with that bad news. He goes on. He says, to all who received him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision or a husband's will, but born of God. He says, yes, there were some people who rejected him. Yes, there were those who didn't understand, who for whom it was concealed. But I'm telling you, for me, it's changed my life. And for my friends, it's changed our lives. And I'm writing this because I want you to know it can change your life too. Because this is what happens. God takes on human form so that humans, men and women, can become children of God. It's amazing, isn't it? The life has come and given us life. The light has come and opened our eyes so that we can see. God has come and he's moved into our neighborhood so that we can know him and be friends with him and actually become his children. Men and women become sons and daughters of God. That's the amazing good news. That's who Jesus is. He is the life. He is the light. He is God come into the world, come in flesh. But he's the one who, by doing that, allows us to become children of God. So the question is not, who was Jesus? That's an interesting historical, archaeological, psychological question. Fascinating. We can discuss it for hours. But the question is actually, who is Jesus? That's the way Alpha puts it. That's the way I want to put it this morning. And the answer is, Jesus is God come into our world. Jesus is the life come into the world. Jesus is the light come into the darkness. Jesus is the one who says to you and to me, become children of God. How do you do that? Well, just believe and receive. That's what John says. It's as simple as that. To those who received him, to those who believed in his name. And that's the offer that he holds out for us again this morning. And I'm sure for most of you here, you think, yeah, that's right. I remember hearing that when I was a child. I remember hearing it when I was a student. I remember hearing it as a young person. I remember hearing it in a service somewhere or from a preacher somewhere or in a book somewhere. And I said, yes, that's what I believe. And I gave my life to become a child of God. Some of you, maybe you never have. But for all of us, I just want to give that chance again this morning, because it's as simple as that, to say, yes, thank you, Jesus. I receive the life. I receive the light. Open my eyes and help me see. Because I want to be a child of God. I want to live as a child of God. I don't want to reject you or be like those other people who turn away. And this outreach term will be going again to who is Jesus? Because it's the fundamental question. And right at the start, I want to give us all the opportunity, if we want to, no pressure, to recommit ourselves to following him. So I'm going to pray. I'm not going to ask you to stand or anything like that, but if you want to echo my prayer of commitment, then just echo it in your heart and say amen in your heart at the end. And if you're not sure and you think, this is interesting, I'd like to know a bit more, I'd like to discuss this properly,